Welcome to the next edition of Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast that talks about overcoming obstacles. This episode, we're going to be talking with the advocates in the firm and who are the voices that make a difference. So what I want to do is have everybody tell us what advocacy means to you, because advocacy means different things to different people. So Rowan, start off by telling me what advocate means to you. Advocacy means to you?
I think advocacy means, it means having someone else's best interests and making sure that their voices are heard, maybe in a time where they're unable to voice it themselves.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Jeff?
For me, advocacy means helping people that got in trouble, but a reason they got in trouble was because of divorce, loss of a job, kids are taken away in family court, and that led them to why they got arrested. So that's why I like helping those people.
Yeah, and it's something that typically is a bigger issue, right? Like, you know, we talk about it all the time that people that are charged with DWI, it's particularly those that have more than one DWI, there's usually an underlying issue that's bringing them in there, right? Like, I've always shared my story of a client that really kind of changed my perspective on it all. And she had told me that she had been raped as a young child and had to deal with that trauma her entire life. And it led to substance abuse issues because, you know, the way that we all cope is different, right? You know, the way that Roland copes would be definitely different than the way that Ryan copes.
I knew that was that way.
And yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, one of our mottos is if you judge, you cannot serve, right? And I truly am a believer in that motto because we don't know what people are going through, right? And what they're escaping, right? Like, people have this exterior shell that you don't know what is on the interior, right? You don't know the struggles they're dealing with, what they're doing to cope with that. And a lot of times it's easy to deal with coping mechanisms of drugs and alcohol, right? Ryan, talk about advocacy for you.
Yeah. So I guess advocacy for me, the first thing I think of is like Game of Thrones, how people choose a champion. That person is that person who will fight for them sometimes to the death. And I guess in a way, that's kind of what we do. We will fight for that person and try to find a solution to their problems. And we're supposed to do that with them completely in mind. And what their goal is our goal.
Yeah, I want to be clear that no one has died at the law firm for advocating for people.
That's not a requirement.
That is not a requirement of the job.
Yes.
Sounds good,
yeah.
Though.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true. So, you know, talk to me a little bit more about that advocacy, Ryan, because like somebody that doesn't watch Game of Thrones, you know, tell me more.
Yeah, so the whole idea is that you fight for that person. I mean, if their goals are what you have in mind. If that person, for example, in a legal case, wants to make sure that you get them their driver's license so they can continue working, that's what we do. That's going to be one of our main goals. So it's taking your client's main goals or whoever you're advocating for and making them your own.
Yeah. No, I love that. Now, let me ask you this. I'm going to give you a little bit of a pushback. What if someone is unable to get their license back because they've got multiple DWIs and that's their goal?
Then you have to shift perspectives with that person and talk to them about what other goals you can achieve, because there are limitations to what can be achieved sometimes. But there are other concerns that that person's going to have, and you can still fight for them, even if you can't, you can't achieve a particular outcome.
Yeah, no, it's for me, and I know for all of you guys, it's about accountability, right? Like, I'll advocate for anybody as long as they're good humans. And I think that, you know, 99.9% of our clients are really good humans, and the ones that appear to not be great humans, it's because, again, that shell that is that exterior shell that's hiding something from them. And I truly believe that. But for me, it's all about accountability, right? Like, I had a really great friend of mine in high school that had multiple DWIs. And if someone has multiple DWIs, I'm not judging them. Again, if you judge, you cannot serve. However, while a case was pending, he got another DWI, right? And his response to me was, hey, Sean, I got in trouble. What are we going to do to get me out of this, right? And that was a moment where I said, Doug, we're done. We're done. Because at this point, you're not taking accountability for your actions. And as a law firm that focuses on representing people charged with DWI, which people are not going to like you until they need you, and I totally understand that and I respect that, but we've got a duty to the community to not only protect the community, right, and advocate for those people that make those mistakes, but those clients that are going to continue doing that and not learn from their mistakes are frankly not clients that we want to represent our brand from there. Sean, talk to me about advocacy for you.
I think in simplest terms, it's being strong for somebody when they're down, when they're weak. You know, and that could be a million different things to different people. But often people don't know the full scope of what they're facing. I had that actually happen yesterday with a client. He retained us, and then shortly thereafter, he struggled with the documents and got frustrated with those, so we had to overcome that. All right. And then we did. And then by the end of the day, he called again and left me a voicemail that said he didn't want to move forward because if he was going to lose his CDL, what's the point? And the gentleman is currently out on workers' comp, and he has a Class A, and he works for a town and somewhere in New York, doesn't matter. And so his focus was, if I'm going to lose that, who cares? But he has never been in trouble before. He's never had as much as a speeding ticket. And so he's only looking at like one thing rather than, well, the whole gamut of his exposure and how this can impact him moving forward. So, you know, in that situation, I involved Dennis and his legal team and everything like that. And fortunately, Dennis reached out to him and said, hey, let's have a conversation at 6 and let's talk about your license and what we can do. And so Dennis did do that, and then his attorney, William Reddy, also had a conversation with him. And then by 7 o'clock that night, he said, yeah, I 100% want to move forward because there was a team effort. He's scared. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He's only focused on the one thing. But by everybody kind of coming together and realizing that, he's going to move forward with representation and solid representation at that to get him through this.
Yeah, no, you bring up some great things that we deal with on an everyday basis. When you're dealing with advocacy, right, it's about getting the clients to understand that full picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people get lost within their own identity, right? Like, I'm a CDL driver, I'm a teacher, I'm a physician, and they lose what makes them the human, right? Like this guy right here, perfect example is that I'm a CDL driver. If I can't do that, then nothing else matters. I'll take the criminal record. I'll take probation. I'll take the interlock device in my car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not able to be able to see beyond that moment, right? And that's what advocacy is getting them to see beyond the cloudiness that's in their brain, right? Mm-hmm. And then once that's more clear, they can make better decisions, mm-hmm. right? Like I tell you guys all of the time is that it would be really easy when somebody contacted us. They contact us in 2 states, right? They're extremely elevated, right? Because they're drunk or high, right? Or they're extremely depressed and low, right? And frankly, those are the best times to convert a case, right? Because there's a level of desperation, right? But that's not how we want clients to make decisions, right? So we have to get them into what I call the decision-making mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is getting them elevated. If they're elevated, bringing them down. And if they're depressed, bring them up so that they can make a decision that is not going to be something they're going to regret, right? Because if they're high, drunk, or depressed, there's going to be a level of, what did I just do, right? They're continuing those decisions that are not the greatest of decisions, right? So advocacy allows us to listen, and transparently, what gets them into those decision-making frames is listening. Mm-hmm. Listening and advocacy and saying, hey, listen, I got your back, right? I'm going to make sure that if we can save your CDL, we're going to do everything possible to save your CDL. If we can't, we're going to put you on a path so that you can get the CDL back in time, or you can get another job so you don't have to deal with a criminal record that follows you forever. And I think that's a lot of people that don't know much about our brand does not understand that. One, there are a lot more innocent people charged with DWI than one would think. The system is built towards people pleading guilty to things that they're not necessarily guilty for because of the risk-reward conversation. Because we all know if we go into a trial with seven peers, a misdemeanor trial with seven jury members, and you say the word DWI, the notion of those seven people is he's guilty, mm-hmm. right? So getting that into a mindset of that true of advocacy, of showing that they're a good human. They may have had a lapse in judgment. They may have made a mistake, but is that mistake something that is and should prevent them from seeing their grandkids, from going to work so they can feed their family, right? So they can do those type of things. And again, don't get me wrong, there are some charges that you can't come back from, right? And it is what it is. But like, if there's a level of advocacy, I think that we can really help anybody. Speaking of anybody, I want to share some stories of clients and advocacy and all of that. So who's got a story they want to share?
I think I'll go first on that. As you guys know, I had a previous career.
27 years
long. How many years, Jeff?
27 years law enforcement.
Okay.
And 25 years ago, we used to get this repeat inmate. I've even arrested him once or twice. He calls 25 years later, and I answer the phone. And I say, almost did it. And he goes, did you work Hugh County? I said, yes. We realized that we both knew each other, and he's like, well, I don't even want to continue because I know what's going to happen. I go, tell me, what are you calling for? Well, he wanted his Second Amendment rights back. So 25 years ago, he was young. He did things probably I did, and he wasn't a bad kid back then. He was young. So we ended up helping him get back into his Second Amendments. So he owns a business, multiple rental properties, great career, kids, everything. So I think we shocked him by wanting to help him.
Yeah, no, that's great. So what I'm hearing you say is when you were in law enforcement, yes, for 27 years, we know, Jeff, you remind us that. Is it 28 years? Because I've heard the word 27 for a couple of years.
You never heard 28.
Oh, yeah. 28 just sounds
100%
weird.
Of the time you said 27.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So what you're saying is when you were a police officer, you arrested this individual, and years later, as an advocate for a law firm, he contacts us, and you remember the name, and he can remember Francis Shelley because you can't forget that name, but he remembered you.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I have a great memory for people I dealt with in the past.
Yeah, I'm sure as a police officer, you probably, you know, can remember those
memories
people. So you can,
dates.
You got to kind of be careful and do all that kind of stuff. So then tell me more. So then he contacts you and you speak to him, you know who he is. And then he, you know, at what point does he say, hey, did you work in Cayuga County?
Right when he heard my name.
Got it.
Because, you know, my last name is not common. And he knew exactly who I was.
Yeah. And then there's this pause saying, great, here's my past coming back to haunt me yet again. Yeah. And you were able to talk through him and get him to see the other side that, you know, the past is the past. We're going to help you move forward.
Absolutely. And he actually came into the office one day to meet with the attorney and myself just to say hi again.
Cool. Yeah. That's a great story. Anybody else got anything? No. You need to raise your hand.
But I prefer it, so continue.
It feels good. It feels right.
If you're going to raise your hand, raise your left hand, not your right hand.
Okay. Got it. So, yeah, I had this client
probably about a year ago is the first time I talked to her. And I think that it's good to remember that the people that we do talk to sometimes are struggling and sometimes struggle for years. And the first time I had talked to her, she told me the story about how she had gotten into this accident that she was, that she got into after she had been drinking out in the bar. And, lo and behold, when she crashed, basically a piece of a tree, I think it was either a tree or the fence itself, almost went through her head. And you know, hearing her story, it was just wild how close she came to dying. But the stuff that she's struggling with is so powerful that, you know, about 8 months later, I'm on the phone with her again. She got into another accident. And I think
was she struggling with another DWI?
Yes. Okay. Sorry, that was a good important part. She was intoxicated again. So she called us to get assistance again. She was happy with our services. So she thought, well, maybe we can help. And really at that point, you know, the conversation's a little bit different because we're trying to help somebody with a serious substance abuse problem that clearly they're on the path to death or to jail or prison.
Yeah, especially if they're, you know, in a year's time frame, twice. It's one thing getting two DWIs when you get pulled over for speeding or you're in a parking lot or whatever, but two times created accidents from that.
It did. And of course, we all know that that's going to, I mean, just even common sense wise, it's going to be more serious when somebody gets into a car accident when they're intoxicated. But I think that the most important part of talking to her was to really tap into compassion, because it's easy to look at somebody in this situation and get angry with them or to say, why the hell are you getting into these positions, especially when we're outside looking in. But, you know, talking to this particular client, you know, the first thing she wanted to do was get into treatment. Like, that was number one priority.
Awesome.
And we were able to represent her in a fashion that allowed her to get into treatment while we dealt with the charges.
Yeah.
And I think that that puts us in a really interesting and kind of special position to help people.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also been times where we've actually driven people to treatment center so they can get the treatment that they want, right?
Yeah.
Because like you said, on the outside, looking in, representing and advocating for people charged with DWI is hard, right? It's not easy because everybody is of the mindset that a DWI is preventable, right? And the truth is, it is, right? Don't get behind the wheel if you've been driving. It's that simple, right? But add in the human factors of life, stress, anxiety, overwhelming, addiction. Oh, I've just had two. I'll be safe to get home, or I won't get caught, or all of those excuses and things that go into our brain. And the truth is, you know, whether you're drunk or stoned or high or whatever it may need to be, it changes your mind and your thinking, right? It's not like right now we're going to say, guys, if you're drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Now, if you're out and you're at a bachelor party, you're at a wedding, your decision-making is different in that mindset, right? And like I said earlier, you'd be shocked how many people are not guilty of the charges that they're facing. I've always said this, that I don't believe in the breathalyzer. Right? We all learn at a very early age that the blood is part of the circulatory system and the breath is part of the respiratory system. However, they've created this device that you breathe into, which is your respiratory system, that will give you a result of something that has involved your circulatory system. So I do not believe in the accuracy of the breathalyzer. And there's a lot of other science that, you know, can follow that through. We did a study years ago where we had somebody that worked with ethyl alcohol, right? And what they did is they worked at a painting job, right? And after they painted all day and they were taking in the fumes because they did not have a mask on like they should have, they were given a breathalyzer and they blew a 0.07.
Oh, wow.
Had not had anything to drink all day. We were sure of that. But the fumes that come in created that, right? There's also situations where you could have two teeth issues where you can have a cavity or something like that, and you can be drinking. And then when you take the breathalyzer, you've only had maybe one drink or two drinks, because it's not illegal to have a drink and get behind the wheel. It's not recommended. But then that gets trapped into that, and then you breathe into the machine, and next thing you know, you're getting that higher level of contact that's not conducive of what your actual BAC is. So again, it's easy to say, well, just don't drink and drive. And yes, do not drink and drive, but there are so many different factors that are involved in this.
I think more concerning than alcohol today, though, is DWAI drugs, just because so many people are smoking weed in their car.
Yeah.
Or their car smells like weed, they get pulled over. And the problem with that is there's not a test to say, yes, you're currently high. So when they're saying, well, I hadn't smoked since the night before, or I only smoke in my car because my parents don't let me smoke in the house, and so it's raining. There's all these factors, but there's not an accurate test to say that you're impaired or you're not.
Yeah.
So it's worse than alcohol because it's in their blood. If they do consent to a blood test, it's a tough one to fight.
It is a tough one to fight, but the way that the law is written, I believe, and again, this is my non-legal advice because I'm obviously not lawyer, is that the law is written differently, because with the DWI, it's 0.08 of 1% or higher.
Right.
Right. With DWAI drugs, it's any level of impairment, right? Which goes to officer assumption, right? Mm-hmm. And their assumptions could be, I smelled the smell of marijuana. The assumptions were glossy eyes, those type of things. And here's the thing, like, Jeff's got glossy eyes right now, and I don't think he's stoned.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
But the delayed reaction makes me rethink that.
Yeah. See, but here's the thing. He's definitely not stoned, but like... He looks it.
Yeah,
Now, add the smell of marijuana, he could be arrested for DWAI drugs and likely convicted, because you're looking at officer assumption. And here's the thing. The police have very hard jobs. I have friends that are police. They have really, really, really hard jobs. But I will always say this. Officer assumptions should never lead to impacts in people's lives. Right?
Yeah, and there's also that confirmation bias that plays in, and he's right. Like, a lot of times the people that get stopped also have, like, a weed pen on them, like those concentrate vapes, where, you know, the officer sees weed paraphernalia more often, I think, probably than open containers even, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Flintstone down the street.
Yeah.
You just came from the store, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of dispensaries are popping up. I think personally it's great for people who are suffering or struggling with things, and it's great and everything, but there's a level of responsibility that comes with using those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of people that are medical patients out there, and there are people that do it recreationally. Either way, you know, you need to make sure you do it in a safe setting, because the police have a lot of ways that they can gather evidence.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Ryan, is that we hear this with prescription drugs too.
I was just going to say prescriptions. Yeah. The other thing, I'm prescribed Xanax, I'm prescribed Oxys. So there's the assumption, or Suboxone or something like that. It doesn't mean that you can drive on it, because it's still a controlled substance. And I think there's a disconnect there.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, I get it, I understand it, but alcohol is also legal too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's illegal to drink and drive. From that. So again, Ryan, you bring out a really great point, is that these things do a lot of really great things. Suboxone gets people off of heroin and all those really awful, terrible consuming things. Marijuana can help people with anxiety and stress and all of that, but it's got to be done in a safe manner, which doesn't lead to addiction, right? And doesn't lead to being arrested, right? Because that typically, when someone's arrested and they're dealing with these levels that where people could potentially go to addiction, it pushes them to a darker place, which perpetuates the addiction levels.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about what's hard for advocacy, being in your guys' role. Because, like, again, we have the motto, if you judge, you cannot serve. That's easier said than done. Is there situations that come across that are really difficult for you guys? And what do you do in those situations when you come across that?
I think you mentioned accountability earlier. I think the people that I struggle with the most are the people who aren't ready for that step. I think that's the hardest part about advocacy is when somebody may not be all that ready to be advocated for in the ways that we're hoping to advocate for them. You know, they want us to say, you're right, you know, the cops are, you know, a-holes, or, yeah, the cops screwed you over, or, you know, the system's out to get you or whatever. And some of that may be true. And I'm not detracting from the fact mistakes are made by law enforcement, things happen. But there's a level of accountability that comes with this. And, you know, I won't get into the details, but I've been arrested before. I've struggled with substance abuse. I've been 2 years clean now. So talking to people who...
Great job.
Thank you. Talking to people who are struggling but not ready for that next step, I think that that's the hardest thing for me. With my arrest, I had to take immediate accountability. So that was really hard for me.
Got it. So what I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you going through that situation forced you to be accountable.
100%.
Right? So your struggles are at times clients that don't take accountability.
Yeah, right. It's hard.
No, I totally get it. It's probably a trigger.
Yeah, it can bring up some of those things that I had to go through. You know, it's not easy. And in my case, you know, I kind of like a lot of the people that call in, I felt like there were problems with my case. And I thought that there were problems with the police handling things. I wasn't happy. But at the end of the day, I looked at the situation and knew that the best way forward was to take accountability and to enter into a plea, at least, that allowed me to get treatment, to go home, to get established again, and to really make improvements in my life.
So, yeah, which you've done, so good job.
Thank you. It's a hard road, and for anyone going through it, I can definitely relate whether or not you're ready to take that next step.
Yeah, and the thing is with recovery is that it's never over.
It's not linear.
Right? It's never over.
Right. Yep.
Awesome. I think for you, like, getting out of that period of your life, and now you obviously... And me knowing you for all of us knowing you for a long time.
She's
now.
My neighbor.
Yeah. in the office. but I think you getting out of that time period and now you can think clearly, I think that also kind of brings back to a hard part of advocacy. If we're all thinking clearly, it's easier to look into a situation and say, my own personal opinion, this is probably what's best for you. But as someone who's going through it, they might not realize it. And for me, dealing with a lot of matrimonial stuff at the firm and dealing with people who might be in a domestic violence relationship, they could be telling me a story about how, you know, he hit me last night and I don't know if I can leave. And obviously me sitting on the outside, it's like, please get yourself out of this situation because you as a human being deserve better than that. But it's so much easier said than done, you know, for a lot of these women and men that go through, you know, domestic violence in their relationships. You know, it's so difficult to leave. So I think for me, it's they have to be on their own terms. They have to be able to do it when it's right for them, when they feel safe. And then, you know, I tell everybody, whether it's today, tomorrow, a month, a year, we'll be here to help you through that tough situation.
Absolutely. And we'll always be ready to talk to people again. You know, that's, I think that's an important thing to mention is if people aren't ready and they decide not to take that next step.
Yeah. And we can't judge them for that.
No, not at all. Not at all. And yeah, there were points in time I wasn't ready. I relapsed a million times. I get it. Like, I understand what people are going through. And so does Rowan, Sean, Jeff.
Yeah,
second Sean. Like, we all.
I'm the first.
Sure, Sean. Yeah. First Sean. Excuse me.
Second Sean today.
you bring up a really great point, Ryan. Is that it's really hard when you are trying to help somebody, right? But they're not ready to help themselves, right? And there's, like I said earlier, there's a lot of reasons for that. Again, you don't know what that exterior. That interior is really there because you're getting the exterior. You're getting the, I want this charge dropped, or, you know, the cop fucked up, or whatever it may need to be. And your initial reaction is, whoa, 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 whoa. At the end of the day, your blood alcohol content was a 0.19.
Right.
So, like, where's this coming from? And if, again, I've said it multiple times throughout this, if you judge, you cannot serve.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the stuff, I mean, with Rowan, what Rowan handles too. And the matrimonial family stuff that is handled on that side, too, it's really difficult, you know, being the neighbor. You know, I understand that. Hearing these different conversations that can be really difficult. So, you know, and a lot of these issues are interrelated too, you know, substance abuse, addiction. So
abuse.
Yeah. Abuse. All of these things are really interrelated. So, you know, we hear similar stories on both sides of the office, whether it's whether it's a matrimonial or a DWI. You'd be surprised about how many of the same issues that we talk about are dealt with.
Yeah, we're dealing with humans.
Yeah.
Right.
And
a lot of divorces are a result of substance abuse, right? A lot of, you know, people not having their Second Amendment rights is because of criminal charges, right? So it's all intertangled into the weave we advocate for every single day. So the next question I want to, you know, pose out there, what do you guys do mentally to stay focused on advocacy in those moments of it really being really, really difficult, while also staying motivated too, right?
Well, you can't let the last call interfere with the next call. You have to put that aside, answer the new call, and do the same thing. Build a rapport, find out what happened, and see if you can help them.
I think everybody's different, right? So that's like, to Jeff's point, the last call, they could have been not ready. They could have been an asshole. There could have been a million things. And then it's not fair to take that out on the next person who could be ready for all the help and all the things. So just realizing that people are different, taking that time and just resetting after each thing. You can't take one approach to everybody because people are different. And their personality types and the way they interact, you know, what they respond to. So I think that's the biggest thing, because there's many times that Jeff and I talk, especially after a difficult call, and then the next one comes right back in, and they could be the nicest human being in the world, you know, that you want to help.
Yeah.
It's all about self-management.
For sure.
Yeah, that's something that I have to focus on, is making sure that those calls, because you're right, like, these could be people that really need help, nicest people in the world. If you carry that day into the next call, that last call into the next call, or for me, even like the night before, making sure that you get stupid shit like sleep or eating right.
Yeah.
Like, taking care of yourself is just as important as taking care of other people. Because the fact is, if you aren't doing both, if you aren't taking care of you, then you're not taking care of them adequately.
Ryan, the one thing that you just hit the nail on the head was, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to advocate for others if you are not taking care of yourself, right? And for years, that was really hard for me. And I was like, no, whatever. I can continue to take care of people. I'm a good human. I'll make them a better human, and it'll take care of itself. The truth is that it will expose itself at some point. And you genuinely have to take care of yourself mentally, healthy, all of the things, before you can truly be an advocate for others. Because at that point, it may be genuine, but there's going to become a time where it unravels, right, for you, because it's going to lead to things like resentment, things like frustration, things like lack of passion, all those type of things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you can't go, and I learned this with the DWI team, you can't go into a call with mental trash. You have to go in clean, fresh, and it's hard to get rid of that mental trash.
Yeah. You know, mental trash for me is extremely important, because if we are arguing internally with ourselves about a conversation we had with somebody else, my conversation with Ryan then as a result is not going to be a very good conversation. Conversations with clients are not going to be very genuine from that. So yeah, we have weekly meetings and we talk about cheese and mold, the good, the bad, and that is extremely intentional so that we can talk about the bad, get the bad out there, and then we can move on from it, right? So that's a really great point of that mental trash. I still remember having a conversation with an attorney 5 years after an incident, and he comes back and goes, well, remember that? And I was like, 5 years ago? He's like, yeah. And I was like, and the truth is, what happens is they make these assumptions based on what they think, right? And then what happens if that thinking is not based on fact, what happens is now it creates a story in their mind that they believe that creates delusion because it's not based on fact. Mm-hmm. You know, I said to the attorney at the time, Rob, I said, Rob, here's why I said what I said. And he goes, oh, that makes complete sense. And I said, had you told me then, you wouldn't have gone 5 years thinking the things that you're thinking, right? But we all do that. Mm-hmm. We all carry the things on our shoulders being like, oh, he wasn't happy about that. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. I wasn't happy about the situation, right? And I tell you guys all the time that there's two things that I look at in clients, in employees, and that's your I and your R, right? Your I is you as an individual. How is Rowan Goodman? How is Sean Scully? How is Ryan Wheel? How is Jeff Francis Cicelli?
Good.
And then as humans, how are they with significant others? How are they doing with their children? How are they doing all of those things? And then you have your R, right? Which is your role. What are you doing in your job? Are you struggling? Are you having conversations with clients that are triggering you from your situation? And how do we address that, right? So when I'm coming at clients and I'm asking those questions, it's typically from the R standpoint and not the guy standpoint. But it's really hard because there's a gray area in between that if you don't do the work on yourselves to emotionally understand the difference, it gets really, really blurry really, really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Next thing I want to throw out there is if you can go back 25 years, Jeff, 50.
I'd be a newborn.
What would be your advice to your younger self?
Take time for yourself. Take vacations. Enjoy your family.
Avoid tornadoes would be my suggestion. No, I'm kidding, but... Yeah, I used to actually struggle with PTSD, so it's actually kind of a profound question because that's like 3 years before my diagnosis. I think that's probably like 10 years before my diagnosis, but like still I would tell myself, you know, if I couldn't change that particular part of my life, if that had to happen anyways, to handle it differently, you know, when I went to substances to deal with the sadness, the stress, the pressure, the nightmares, whatever, that I instead went to therapy and went to treatment. And, you know, I'm hoping, you know, looking back on our mistakes, that a lot of people who deal with substance abuse feel the same way.
Ryan, that's a great, great way to say, if I can go back and change something, what would it be? When you went through that traumatic experience with tornadoes, you turned to drugs and alcohol rather than therapy. And you see the path that that took you on. So that's really great advice. And the truth is, that's what our clients are going through. It may not be a tornado.
Right.
It could be got an argument with the significant other and they're like pissed off and they feel disrespected. So they're going to leave the house.
The angry drive,
right? And that's, you know, they're just angry and they get into an accident or whatever, right? So what about you, Sean?
I would say enjoy the moment. Don't rush to the next thing. Like, I think, you know, especially as a father and, you know, like, I never, younger me would always be like, I can't wait to buy a house. And then you buy a house. I can't wait till you have a kid. And you're not enjoying the moment as they happen. You're always like looking to the next stage rather than relishing the current stage. And then, you know, as your kids get older and they go on to college or they're, you know, end of high school or whatever like that, you look back and you're like, where'd the time go? So making time, which I've done a great job specifically in the last, you know, 10 years. But at the beginning, it was like trying to advance moments, you know. Somebody asked me that. In a bar, ironically, like a younger guy is like, what advice would you give yourself? And he was starting his career and, you know, going to get engaged. And I told him the same thing. I'm like, don't rush the moment. Don't rush everything. Yeah. and I'm like, and don't get bogged down by stuff. Like, stuff is stuff and you'll lose it. And I'm somebody who's been divorced. You do lose it. Yeah. You know, experiences are more important than stuff. Time is the most valuable thing you can give to anybody. And don't just give that away. You know what I mean? Like, spend that with the people that matter.
Yeah, for sure. It's super powerful in appreciating the things that you have versus being envious of the things that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's easy. You know, especially in the world of social media, it's easy to see, oh my God, they have this amazing car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they have this amazing lifestyle. And the truth is, behind the scenes, they're a fucking train wreck,
mm-hmm.
right? And we know all of us have those stories, you know, of people that were like, that's not your life, mm-hmm. right? But the truth is that appreciate the things that you have. That's super powerful. What about you, Rogo?
I would say I don't know if I'm qualified to give advice, but I would say to stay true to yourself and always invest in yourselves. If there's, you know, something that you're passionate about, go out there and get those resources and do it. Surround yourself with great people, because at the end of the day, you are who you surround yourself with. And these four great, amazing men that I'm next to, I'm around 5 days a week. So I surround myself with great people every day.
You're great too, Rowan.
Thank you. At work, at home. So I always say, stay true to yourself. You will find your people and go out there and do what you were meant to do.
Yeah. I can't agree with that anymore, Rowan, is that you are the byproduct of the five people that you hang around the most.
Yeah.
And it's so popular, like, oh, whatever. I said, think about it. And it really, really does. And look at it from the world of addiction, right? A lot of times when addicts fail, it's because of their surroundings, right? The stories of, I've shared multiple stories. The stories of great success are typically people that do treatment out of state, right? Now, the key is to then find a sober living that is not back in the same situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, even with, you know, you're talking about incarceration, recidivism rates and all of that, is the reason why the recidivism rates are as high as they are in the United States is that sometimes it's easier to get food, to get meals, to get education while you're incarcerated versus not being incarcerated, right? That's a substantial problem for me.
Yeah.
When it's easier to get a jail cell than it is to be getting a rehabilitation bed, mm-hmm. I have problems.
100%.
It's a complete issue for me. I've had people that have been at the brinks of, I need help. They can't get it, right?
Well, they'll send those people home for 2-3 weeks looking for a bed.
Yeah.
That's always been a shortage.
And the problem is it's even bigger than that, Jeff, right? Mm-hmm. Because you get somebody to the point where they've hit bottom and they're ready to get help, right? That's the time that they need to get help. And going to an AA meeting may be helpful, but that's not strong enough for them, right? So what happens is they go through the withdrawal. And this is what people don't understand, is that when you're an addict, when you have withdrawal, you have these physical reactions, your body, that frankly can kill you. People that go through withdrawal can die from withdrawal.
It's violent.
It's crazy. And again, people that don't deal with addiction and don't have that in their life, and they're judging these people that get DWIs or whatever like that, I'm telling you, they can die from getting off of that drug, right? So now let's assume that they put in that hard work, that sickness to go through that, right? They're ready to go and get some help to clear their mind to get there, right? Now what happens? They go to the facility. Sorry, we don't have any room. Mm-hmm. Okay? Right now, probably likely a trigger because they're like, oh, if they can't help me, who can?
Right.
Right? So then what happens is now because they have weaned themselves off it, right? So let's say they used to take 50 milligrams of heroin in a day, right? Now they're weaning themselves off it. Their old way of doing it is the 50 milligrams. So they're like, that's what I'll do. Now what will happen is that they'll do the same amount because that's what they're used to, and they will overdose. So essentially, by not having the ability to have rehabilitation centers, we're actually killing people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yep. It's vital to, you know, have those options available, and not enough people have those options available. And frankly, like I couldn't feel worse for people who are in a financial position or are in a situation where it's so difficult to get those resources. And I think that there's also a level of not knowing how, where to start.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of relating to how we can help people. That's one of the things that we can do is, you know, you don't know how to handle this issue, this substance abuse issue or whatever. Here's what we can do to help you.
Yeah, and it's a really great point, Ryan, is only the rich addicts should not be served.
Exactly.
Right? If you have money, you have the ability to go to any treatment facility that you want.
And most people don't have that.
You see it's celebrities all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you know, if a celebrity needs to go into rehab, guess what? They have a door that opens for them, mm-hmm. right? But if you're not a celebrity, you don't have the money, you have to wait. You have to wait until A, you have money, B, insurance approves it, which is a whole nother conversation, right? So it's a substantial problem. Is there, you guys, before we close, is there anything else that you guys want to toss out there? Bueller? Anyone?
I mean, it looks like Jeff's about to say something. Yeah. I don't know if you're going to.
I don't want to jump over anybody. Yeah, I just want to say that if you're in trouble, if you're in need, give us a call. That's what we're there for. We'll be honest with you.
Even if Jeff arrested you in the past, it's okay.
Don't hold that against me.
Yeah, none of us are going to judge you.
We're not going to sugarcoat anything. We'll do whatever we need to help you.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I tell these guys and gals, all the time that if you don't feel that we can help somebody, don't take their money.
Mm-hmm.
Just closing a case because they have a charge pending is not good enough.
Right.
It's not good enough. If there's not that level of accountability, again, knowing that there's some addiction problems, so they may be deflecting all of that. But just to take someone's money, to take some money, their money, it doesn't work for us. We have to feel good about what we do, right? Especially because it's so difficult what we do, that we have to feel good that we're actually helping somebody. And if we don't feel like we're going to help somebody, we're not going to take their money.
And people mm-hmm. appreciate that. And I've had it. People, I can't believe what you just said when you don't want to take our money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot with Second Amendments. Like, wow, you tell them, you're not going to have a problem. Fill out the application. Apply. You don't need us. We don't need to take your money to help you right now. Just go through with it.
Yeah. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, I would never recommend the public defender, not because of the result outcome, but because they're so busy, right? They have so many cases that they can't give the human mm-hmm. the amount of human attention that they need. That's what makes us different than, frankly, any law firm, because we're going to bring that human approach. Because, listen, the truth is, there's lawyer jokes out there for a reason, right? But the truth is that our culture is all about advocacy. Our culture is all about helping each other, supporting each other. And that is a game changer when it comes to legal services. So in closing, I want to just give a plug for next month's version, where we're now going to bring in some of the lawyers, and we're going to talk about some of the cases and some of the things that they've done and how we use advocacy with the legal side, right? Because that's the next piece, right? Because we have to be able to, from the moment that they contact us to the moment their case is closed, and then even follow up afterwards to make sure that they're okay mm-hmm. is vital, right? Because for me, it's not about somebody gets a DWI charge, let's handle the charge, be done, right? If there's underlying issues, we want to make sure that they're okay. Whether that's an alcohol evaluation, whether it's getting them the treatment that they need, that they haven't been able to get, or that's just that check-in saying, hey, listen, it's your birthday. I hope you have a great birthday, and certainly hope that things are substantially better than when you first reached out to us, right? So stay tuned. And get ready for next month's powerful episode.
Go Bills.